So the power went out at my house yesterday when thunderstorms came rolling through. And not in a graceful way. Like, we had like a full-on brownout for a good 10, 15 seconds where all the lights just dimmed and started like flickering on and off like a horror movie. Mm-hmm. Not good for anything with a power supply in it. So I ran into the garage to flip the main breaker, but it was already too late. But I was just getting like productive with my day, and I had all my terminal windows open and connected all the servers and logging and tailing and running servers locally for development. And of course I don't have UPS, which I really should just get one, and all gone. So I was just like, screw it. I'm done for today.
Yeah, that doesn't... I was going to ask if you had any sort of battery backup or anything like that. I've been needing to get one.
My experience with battery backups are like, yeah, they're great, and like I should get one just for basically the iMac and the second monitor, so I have time to stay at my work and shut down safely. But like, man, for the amount of time you use it versus like the amount of times they go bad and the batteries fail and you have to replace the batteries, or like there's just basically like this hunk of toxic materials that now you have to dispose of.
Right.
I don't know. It's never been... It's just always such a pain.
I've never used one. I've never actually owned a backup battery.
And they're freaking loud. When the power goes out, they just like beeping at like 1,000 decibels for no reason, which doesn't help the stress of the situation of the power going out.
Do they all do that?
As far as I know, I think it's by law required that every UPS pierce your eardrums, you know, with beeping when the power goes out.
Well, I asked because I just lied when I said I've never had one. Well, I guess it's not really mine. So my fiber connection, the jack on the wall has a battery backup attached to it.
Yeah, and a lot of them have that, and I don't really understand why, but it's cool that they do.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so we have one there, and a while back, a rat chewed through a cord. Yeah, I'm not going to tell. I'll spare everyone the details of the full story there. But because of that, and because of where the rat chewed it and all that, we actually ended up having to have an electrician come out. And so the fire department just put piece of tape over the break until an electrician came out just to make sure everything was fine and the house wouldn't burn down. I think part of it, too, is like extra precaution because of how dry it is here and the fire risk here and all that. But yeah, so the power was out overnight, and I do remember that beeping incessantly until it ran out of battery juice.
Yep. That sounds right.
Yeah, that was fun.
Or I could just, you know, work off a laptop like you do. You need free battery backup.
Yep. And I also have that little solar battery that I use all the time. I carry that in my backpack now when I go out to coffee shops. More recently, over the last 2 weeks, I've been going to a coffee shop almost every day, mainly because Jamie was about to lose her mind. She took the bar over the last 2 days, so she's done with it now, but it was like the last 2 weeks before, you know, the bar exam.
Wow.
So she was like, she was going crazy. So we ended up going to a coffee shop every day. And that thing is a lifesaver at a coffee shop because you don't have to try to jockey for position for the outlet. You know, you can tell when people are waiting for it because they're like side eyeballing the seat next to the outlet when they're in line for coffee.
I can't live that kind of pressure, man.
Yeah. Well, more recently, I've been going to a different coffee shop, and there's a much younger crowd, and I've noticed that people just put their laptop there and walk away, which is bolder than me.
That's pretty lame, too.
The other day when I showed up, someone had plugged their laptop in and walked away. I don't know where they were, but
it's a power move.
It was interesting. Power move? I'll win that game. What was I talking about? Going to the coffee shop every day. My solar battery. I've been bringing that around. And so when I'm at home in the mornings, I'll just slap the solar panel on the ground and plug the battery in and go out about my day. And so that when it comes time to go to the coffee shop or ride my bike down there or whatever, the battery's usually charged up.
I'm picturing you being like some guy wearing camo with a beard, like a prepper, like, you need to charge your phone. I got a solar charger. And you go like set it up in a field and like crouch down and like, here, there's good solar radiation here. It'll charge your phone.
I don't know. It's been a nice weird peace of mind, I guess, having it in my backpack. So it's like, what if the site goes down? Like it doesn't, but what if it does sort of thing? I just knocked on the table if you didn't hear that. You know, so it's like if I'm out and about and I've been at the coffee shop, and I'm just about to, you know, run out of battery, and a message comes through the site down, you know what I mean?
So I don't have to. You're a digital prepper.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Digital prepper, that's a good way to put it.
Nothing wrong with that, honestly. Like, I get the feeling. I understand the anxiety there, the need to be connected. It's not even really a need. It's just you feel like it's necessary. I mean, you're the first and last line of defense against that kind of stuff. So
yeah, I would like to be able to unplug more, definitely. And when Paul was around, we kind of helped each other out doing that, I suppose. Like sometimes he would be like, hey, you know, I'm going off away this weekend. And so I'd be like, don't worry about it. You know, I'm covering. And it's not like we had on-call shifts or anything like that. It's just sort of nice to know that there's an additional person. So if you do have, like if you do lose service or something, I don't know. It's kind of funny to think like that because we're not an enterprise business. And so if we go down for half an hour, it's not like we're losing millions of dollars. You know, it's not good for business, but the consequences aren't nearly as grave. But I still don't like the idea of not being notified, not being aware of something. So actually that brings me to, and I hadn't even planned about talking about this with you, but that brings me to a question I had, or yeah, I guess it's a question for you. So we use task.start with Elixir to start various jobs. So for example, if you buy something from DK, there are a number of different things that spin up and run. So we have one task that runs if you buy something that needs to be shipped freight. Then I have a worker that runs and sends an API request to our shipping provider and creates a listing there. There's another job that runs that emails the receipts to the store owner and the customer. And so there's just different things that happen. And so last week, a receipt job, I think it was, failed. And for some reason, I wasn't notified of the failure. And so I've been sort of paranoid about that recently. And not to drag anyone through the mud, but I've been using XQ. And because we're on Heroku, we use Redis. So we can't rely on any sort of job in-memory job state or anything like that. So I've been using XQ to queue jobs to Redis. And while it mostly works pretty okay, like the web UI reporting and failed job reporting just isn't good. In fact, if I click on one of the buttons in the web UI, it'll cause a RAM spike in my app and cause the Heroku Dyno to restart.
Wait, so just to be clear, is the UI from Rescue or from XQ?
From XQ.
Interesting. Okay, I mean Rescue must have its own interface, right?
Probably. I'm not using Rescue though.
Oh, Rescue is just what, the Ruby gem version of it?
Yeah, Rescue is just the Ruby gem version
of
it.
So, I understand.
Oh, I said XQ. Sorry, XQ, EXQ.
No, I wasn't sure if XQ and Rescue were interoperable, like it's the same protocol or something, Redis backed.
So it's funny, I just now realized Rescue and XQ, but
oh no. Okay.
They're not, so XQ is supposedly interoperable with Sidekick.
That's what I was thinking of. Okay. So
Yeah, that makes more sense.
So there's no other interface into your thing besides what XQ provides out of the box.
Right. So I guess for anyone that's not familiar with like Sidekick or something like that, so you have jobs that run and you can throw them into a Redis database, and you might have something like Rescue or XQ that basically what happens is when a new job is added, it'll go to the queue, pull the job off the top, it'll run that job, and then it'll either pass or fail that job. So if a job fails, it can be retried later, essentially.
Well, there's really two steps to it, right? There's enqueuing the job, which is like you give it a payload of, hey, this is the function I need to call, and these are the parameters to the function. Mm-hmm. And then there's the workers, which can be any number of processes that are pulling those jobs off of the queue, attempting to mm-hmm. execute them. And if they succeed, then they drop off the queue. And if they fail, they retry with some logic, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a much better description of it. So then you have some UIs that you can use to kind of monitor this. So one of the big, I think one of the most popular ones on the Ruby side is Sidekick. And so basically gives you a UI, you can log in, you can see how many jobs are running, you can see how many workers you have running, you can see, I don't know, just a bunch of stuff. You have insight, you have you can observe things that are happening. And if I'm remembering correctly, you can also look at failed jobs. there, and you can look at retries and things like that. So XQ has an interface, but it's pretty immature, hasn't been worked on from what I can tell in a while. And I would love to contribute to it. I just don't have the bandwidth to learn Ember. The UI is written in Ember right now.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So, and the RAM issue happens because the Ember endpoint. So let's say you have a 500,000 jobs, that have run or whatever, and you click on that and it's going to try to report stats on 500,000 jobs, and that's not great, right? So basically you're just going to new up a bunch of data, and depending on the amount of data, you can exhaust all the RAM that you have available to you, which was happening in my case.
It also really depends how they're doing the querying in Redis as well, because mm-hmm. when you're enumerating mm-hmm. keys like that in Redis is actually really, really slow, because they actually tell you not to like try to get a list of queues. They should only use it for development, not for production, because it's like big O of N
right.
Complexity versus like storing a lookup table or an index or something and just accessing the keys directly by the value. So I could see why enumerating would be a toll on Redis and on your application, because you got to
yeah.
do that enumeration, which is really not set up for.
Yeah, exactly. And it just allows you to do that. So you can just click on a large queue. It's going to do all that stuff, and then boom. Look in your Heroku logs and your RAM's gone. So there's that. I just don't really have a whole lot of oversight. And so that's what one thing I've been thinking about. Maybe not even oversight, just insight. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. I don't have a lot of insight. So, I mean, like Rails has Sidekick, Laravel has Horizon. Other things have other things. I don't know. There's a bunch of different versions. So we fast forward now to, you know, we're looking at XQ. I could try to contribute to this thing, but I don't know Ember. And I think maybe I've talked to you about this before, but in sort of Googling or like searching around in the Elixir forum, I came across somebody that was basically talking about Factory incessantly. And so I looked at Factory, and it turns out that it's from the same person that created Sidekick. And where Sidekick is sort of Rails specific, Factory is more of a agnostic, like a language framework agnostic setup for you. So the tagline is high performance job processing for the polyglot enterprise. but basically it gives you a unified interface. So if you have an Elixir API and you had a Node API and they both needed to run jobs, you could use the same Factory server to run those jobs, and it doesn't matter what language or whatever it's coming from. So my question is, how paranoid would you be about using something like Factory, because it is pretty young still?
Man, I don't even know enough about that space to give it's Factory, FAKTORY. The link's purple, so apparently I've looked at this before.
I definitely remember sending it to you, yeah.
You've probably sent it to me. It's a standalone server outside of Redis.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't use Redis. It uses... it talks about this in the blog post, maybe? It has... it's not on Redis, but it has a different... It's like its own version of some sort of database.
Another option, too, is you could use RabbitMQ because it's just a messaging system, but in theory, your messages could be individual jobs that are kind of queued up and worked on.
Hmm.
Although it's not really designed for that, so I wouldn't really go that direction.
Right. So I guess my options are something like Factory, which seems nice.
Tell me about your job workload. Like how many numbers, what's the quantity of jobs, and what's the like guarantee you need in terms of time to get them done? Because if I'm getting the gist right, like it's mostly just email jobs. Is that right?
Yeah. So probably a million-ish a month.
Okay. The direction I've been steering lately is towards fewer outside dependencies in terms of running services. I know it's kind of hypocritical because I run like 17 different languages now for our stack, but
yeah,
man, how nice would it be? What else do you use Redis for besides the job queue? Do you use it for anything else? Do you use it for PubSub or anything?
On the back end? No, literally that's the only thing we're using Redis for. Is
you don't use it for the session management anymore, right?
That's correct. Although I might have something to say about that after this as well. But yeah, we're only using it for the job stuff. And really the really only reason I was using it was because we were using Sidekick before with Rails. And we were using it with Sidekick and we can't rely on in-memory store. And I didn't want to have to like retry logic and all that stuff. So that's why I reached for XQ.
Got it. So, okay. I attempted to write my own. All right. Sorry. Let me back up again. Following that thread of fewer external dependencies. Be great if you could just get rid of Redis and you already have a singleton global data store that your entire application depends on. And it's called Postgres. You have a database. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, Redis is database too, but why do you like you're just trying to persist data? So I would lean towards throwing your jobs into Postgres, which you already have in support and backup, and like is you know everything about, and you're already using it. I tried to write my own. I called it Odd Job. Shout out GoldenEye for Nintendo 64.
Did you send this to me at some point?
Yeah, it's bad. I'm not going to publish it because it's bad, but it doesn't really work that well. But in the time between when I developed this and now, there is actually a Postgres back job queue for Elixir called Rihanna, which I think we may have mentioned on the show before, but I'm mentioning it again. I haven't used it, but this is the direction I would love to go. It's like, again, you've already got the data store. You're just looking to work jobs. Postgres is fast. It's pure Elixir. Like, there's no weird other dependencies on you know, trying to be interoperable with other workers or whatever. You don't need any of that stuff, right? You're just running Elixir code. So I don't know. I would take a look at this Rihanna thing personally. I've been looking for an excuse to use it. I haven't played with it yet, but it's surely, like, you could spin up some Heroku workers that just run like worker processes, right? They're not running on the same servers that are.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
Spitting
right now.
Out web pages.
I'm using the.
Okay. Yeah.
I use the proc file to do that actually. So we have environment variables that, based on their presence, turn on or off the job functionality. And so in the proc file for the web, we don't turn the jobs on, and for the worker we turn the jobs on, and so that's how we're doing that right now.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I think it's perfect. And I would look at that. I don't know about this factory thing. I don't know if your volume of jobs is really necessary for this kind of specialized application.
Yeah, I had thought briefly about a Postgres backed store or a queue store. I've never used one. Rihanna looks neat. In the past I've bookmarked Honeydew and also Ectojob as well. They all seem to kind of do the same thing, but yeah.
Yeah, I think I tried Honeydew and I ended up not going with it for some reason.
Honeydew. I get it. Yeah, it looks okay. I don't know.
Do you get the Rihanna one?
Rihanna. Work, right?
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
It took me a second. Yeah, that maybe, you know what? Maybe I should go that route because we're not using Redis for anything else. It's another thing to worry about. And
listen, you can build your own stats views that are really, really freaking efficient just using Ecto.
That's what I was about to say. Live view, anybody?
Oh, see, now you're thinking. Now you're thinking with Phoenix.
Now I'm thinking with Phoenix. Yeah, so... Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I should give that a shot. It makes me feel a lot better because that was something I've just been thinking about. Is like I just need transparency into that, and I just don't have that right now. I just don't have it. So
I might play with it. I mean, how many different endpoints do you have? Like, how many different calls into this queue do you have in terms of like throughout your code? Is it like you only have a few different types of jobs you're queuing up?
No. Not just a few, but it's the way it's done right now. It would be pretty easy to kind of update them in a swoop, more or less.
Yeah, refactor it into some module that's just jobs, and then just swap out the implementation underneath, and you're good to go.
Yeah. I think I'll probably try something like that. I need a good break. So I've been banging my head against the wall with this subscription stuff. So I need a break and I need to feel productive. So maybe I'll give that a try. You need to process 10. Yeah. I mean, it sounds fast enough. I've never had to need to try to process 10,000 jobs per second.
That's what they claim. So, I mean, that should be good enough. You're going to be IO bound to the API that you're calling for sending emails anyways at that point. So, yeah, I don't know. That's my totally uninformed knee-jerk opinion, if you'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it. I'll try it out and let you know how it works. That's just one less thing I have to have running on my computer when I'm working as well during the day. Not that Redis takes a lot of resources by any means, but
Redis is the fastest launching application I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, it is pretty great. It's really just I don't know. So Here we go. We're getting this mechanical worms here. It's about to happen. So, I've been writing PHP lately.
I want to know where this is going.
With Laravel specifically, and that's strictly because Jamie had this idea for an app that she thinks that she could actually sell to some of her lawyer friends.
Well, thanks for listening to this week, everyone. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. I'm gonna turn off my Twitter DMs now. And make it private. No, it's like, it's good. Like, it's okay. I don't know. So it all kind of started like this. So we use PHP for one of our little microservices in Design Collective. And so we basically have a little PHP microservice for the box packing problem. So if you're ordering several items and we're trying to quote shipping, like, we need to know what size box that this thing might fit in, right? And that's because when you purchase from a store in Design Collective and it goes out non-freight, the store has the option to purchase a shipping label online and bring it to USPS that way or UPS that way. And so to do that, we need to know actually what size box will this stuff fit in. And so instead of paying somebody monthly, like finding a service to do this, or instead of rewriting the box packing algorithms ourselves, we found one that's already implemented that seems to work well in PHP. And so we just stood up a little PHP API that has one endpoint. It takes a list of products and the dimensions, and it returns a list of boxes that the thing will fit in. And we use that to send to the Easy Post API. And so that way the user can say, oh yeah, I want to buy this box or whatever, right? So we have PHP running there. And so I've had to make a couple of updates to that with box sizings and things, and I started getting paranoid because I was like, I really don't know PHP at all, and there's this thing that's pretty important here, so I should probably level up my PHP a little bit. So I found myself on Laracasts and going through PHP stuff there. Fast forward a little bit, we started using Statamic for a lead page site for sales, our sales team. So we just made a Statamic site that has a couple of lead page templates. They can drag and drop pages together for, I don't know, marketing to different people. That's also on PHP, and Statamic is built on top of Laravel. And I had to build a couple of custom plugins for the Statamic site that integrates with MailChimp and Pipedrive, which was actually really dead easy because it's built on Laravel. You run PHP Artisan Make add-on, and it bootstraps an add-on for you. And so I wrote a very small amount of PHP that makes a couple of API requests to a different API and sends form data there, right? So that got my foot a little bit farther into the door. So I started thinking, hey, that was really easy. And I'm really not familiar with this stuff at all. I wonder what Laravel itself is like. So she had this little idea. And before I knew it, I was typing Laravel new app and jumping into that side of things.
It's a slippery slope.
PHP is strange to me. Syntax-wise is strange to me. But Laravel has a lot of stuff in it. So I was going through the docs, and it just, it's some things I struggled with. So like my criticism of Rails after going back to Rails for a little bit after being in Elixir and Phoenix, I was like, oh, there's so much stuff. I don't know what's happening. It's hard for me to realize what's happening. Same thing with Laravel. But for whatever reason, the PHP is easy for me to jump through. I don't know why that is or how that even is, but it hasn't been as big of a hurdle this time around. And the other thing is that with Laravel, it does so much stuff for me. And I think I was just tired of working on boilerplates. I think we've been talking a lot about this. So just reading through the docs, I was like, okay, you can rate limit an API endpoint by adding a function call to the route definition, which blew my mind. In the controllers, if you type int the type of resource that's coming in, it'll automatically go and find that resource for you. And I think really the thing that I liked most about it so far was the blade templating language, or the templating setup is really nice.
That I know some of those words. No. Laravel seems really cool. It seems like they've, I don't know the timeline of how old or new Laravel is, but it seems like they've sure have taken the best of modern web app development and really, really run with it with all those tools that they give you. It's pretty fascinating to look at. Like you said, just look at all the different things in the ecosystem that you can just come built in, and it is very, very appealing. Again, I don't have any experience with PHP or Laravel. The first time I heard of it was on Full Stack Radio, which I think I've mentioned on the show before, a podcast from Adam Wathen, and he's a big Laravel guy. Mm-hmm. And he has some courses and videos and screencasts and stuff about Laravel development. He's got a test-driven Laravel course here, and anyway, I don't know. It's pretty cool. What's been your, so you've worked through, you're working your way through the major web frameworks, right? You've done some Rails, you've done some Phoenix, yeah. Now you're doing some Laravel. What are your, I don't know, what's the high level impressions from a beginner of Laravel?
Beginner of Laravel. The community is really good and really helpful and really nice so far.
That's nice.
Yeah, I think really the reason why I kicked at Laravel instead of Rails was just looking through their site. I clicked on official packages and just, okay, so there's an official Laravel developed cashier package, which is for working with Stripe and Stripe subscriptions. First party package.
Yeah, I'm looking at the docs now. This is amazing.
Then you go over to Dusk, and there's a first party Laravel developed end-to-end basically web driver testing setup. Then I clicked on to Horizon, and I was like, oh, they have their own first party Sidekick UI for their job setup, which by default I think is also database backed. I could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure it's database backed. You can obviously tell it to use Redis or whatever, but.
And they also have a tool confusingly called Mix, which has nothing to do with Elixir Mix.
Right. Laravel. Yeah. Mix. It's a web pack wrapper sort of. Then I looked at Passport, which it basically configures, access token, API keys for your app. So it's a first party developed package, Laravel Passport, that when you throw it in there, your users, you can grant them like scoped access tokens. So you can say, here's an API key for this, here's an API key for the entire API, or here's a token that's scoped to just one feature in our app, right?
All right. Let's back up here. All right. We spent the past couple of weeks harping on like libraries that you plug into your application that do a million things that might not be a good fit.
So I'm about to get to that. Yeah, I'm about to get to that.
So, okay, I'll let you finish then.
So I guess what I'm saying is that there's all these first party packages, like, dang, they look really nice and all that. And so so I think you asked for my initial impressions. So my initial impressions were like, I feel like I could get really far really quickly with this stuff. And then I started Googling around more. So I think the one that I was looking into specifically was Spark. Where is Spark?
Powerful SaaS application scaffolding. Stop writing boilerplate and focus on your application.
Right. So it's one of those pre-built application bases. So you buy it and it comes with like localization. It comes with an admin UI. It comes with like some sort of base Stripe integration,
subscriptions.
Yeah, exactly. Team.
Two-factor auth.
Yeah, two-factor auth, user impersonations, an API setup, all that stuff. And this looks like on the tin, it looks great. But again, like, so you're started making that point. Like, it sounds great as long as your application can work within those assumed defaults. And
which, to be fair, is a lot of applications, especially early stage, you know, just let's hit the ground running kind of applications, right?
Right. So DK wouldn't. DK just wouldn't, because we're a market. We're like a third party marketplace in the middle. So it wouldn't fit this. But like you said, I don't know, 80% would fit into this. And so I started searching more about Spark, and that's exactly what I started finding, was it's great until you need to do X, but it's not like, it's not an assumed use case for the package, right? And then it becomes a little more difficult to extract or expand upon and things like that. But so I think that's what I'm finding, is a lot of these like highly specialized ones that look really appealing, Laravel Spark, you can search for Spark-like things. So there's a bunch for Rails. There's a bunch of different ones for Laravel and PHP that are kind of pre-configured SaaS apps essentially out the gate, right? But that's always the risk you take, right? If you go that route, then suddenly there's a use case that is not necessarily supported. You find yourself having to extend something, and maybe it's not super extensible. So I guess where I've landed on that is kind of in the middle. I'm kind of torn right now, because with Phoenix, again, this is because I'm really familiar with it. I can work with it really quickly. And there are some really nice packages that are coming about that solve a lot of these problems that I don't want to have to keep resolving. So for example, new friend of the show, Dan Schultzer, I think I said his last name correctly. I think maybe a couple weeks ago or last week I mentioned a package called POW for Phoenix. And it's akin to, what's the one, Devise or Coherence. But POW was made in with a different approach. So Coherence was made to be extendable through configuration, right? So in a config file, you say, this is my auth module, this is my user module, this is a different module. And POW is sort of taking a different approach, where it's customizable based off of functions that you can override when you want to, and not based off of, here's a module, and it becomes much more difficult to extend something when it's configured via modules versus when it's extended with code, if I'm making any sense when I say that.
Yeah, code is always going to be the most flexible thing you can do as compared to configuration.
Right. So there are more packages coming out that I could just rely on in that sense and get me farther with Phoenix. But really, honestly, that's what's been pulling me into the Laravel world, is just the ecosystem, how large it is. And I don't know, I maybe I'm following the right mixture of people on Twitter, but Laracon hit, and all I saw for like a week was Laravel stuff. And so then I was like, I'm going to give this a shot. So my first impressions were, like you said, you can't just buy wholesale into, there's all this stuff, I can just use it, my app will be done, because it's most likely the case where something will happen and you'll need to extend something in a certain way and it'll be difficult, right? But for an app, you can get really far really quickly with Laravel, and the number of first party things they support or have support for, like we were saying, Stripe, job queue UIs, and monitoring. There's even one that has an integration with Elasticsearch, and by default, I think it integrates with Algolia, but you can have it hook up to Elasticsearch, and so it just handles all of the Elasticsearch stuff for you. So I guess in my mind, if I'm thinking about Elixir and Phoenix, it's more akin to the Node world, where you kind of piecemeal things together. And Laravel obviously is more akin to the Rails world, where it's kind of, we've made the choices for you and you use the tools that you have. So I don't know. That's actually one thing that I was searching for, was how flexible is Laravel, you know? And so one thing that I found was, while it does ship with Eloquent, which is their ORM, which uses the active record pattern, it does look like there's really good support for the repository pattern, which is what Ecto uses, for example. So if you ever needed to drop the active record pattern, if it gets really really difficult, and you need to reach for something that's more more configurable or extendable and not as one-dimensional, I guess, maybe, as the active record pattern is, you could do that.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. Sorry. I don't have anything to add. You brought up really good points, and I agree with you.
Yeah, so I like Elixir more than PHP. I like Phoenix a lot, but I guess it comes down to how, my energy levels, right? Like, what can I do to actually get this thing out the door without losing steam or realizing like, oh, I have to build this thing from scratch. And it's a side project, you know, so that's a realistic thing that can happen, right? I could run out of time because, oh, there's not a dependency that exists that does how I need it. So I have to build one, and that becomes a momentum killer, I suppose. Maybe that's a cop-out way of saying it, but it is what it is, you know?
So here's a question for you. Was there anything you looked at in your Laravel exploring so far and be like, oh, I wish I had that, and like tried to bring it over or thought about bringing it over to tools that you know?
Honestly, yes. So I've actually been scouring the Laravel docs and looking for things that I can bring into Design Collective, whether it's design-wise, whether it's conceptually or even terminology, right? So that's one thing sometimes that I struggle with Phoenix is it's so open-ended. It can, like, deciding what to call something, I guess, can be difficult, right? So I got the word policies, for example, from the Ruby world, right? And Laravel, I think, uses policies as well. And they have another term called gates, which I kind of like. So policies are sort of user authorizations against a resource, whereas a gate is a user authorization against a section of endpoint, for example, right? So in Elixir, it's just a plug. A plug is a plug, so you might just call it authorization plug. You might call it a controller auth plug. You might call it a gate plug, for example. But I'm finding a lot of like common terminology that I think I can rely on to like actually name things, right? So right now I have a plug folder with a bunch of plugs in it, and you kind of have to know what they are by looking into the plugs themselves, I guess.
Yeah, because when you call something a plug, that explains what it is, but it doesn't explain what it does.
Yes, yeah. So if I look at Laravel and I'm like, oh, gates are a thing that helps protect an endpoint and not a resource, I can just start using that terminology because it gives a definition to what that's doing, right? So
if only there was an Elixir library with the concept of something called policies.
Well, this is different than a policy.
I don't know. That must be out there. I know, but you mentioned policies before from Ruby Land. And
oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm using Bodyguard, and I haven't updated yet. You said you were going to hurt me, I think, if I didn't, and I haven't done it yet.
Shame.
Come at me, but I haven't had time.
Shame.
But yeah, so
shame.
There's stuff that I guess how I see Laravel is that it's like a group of people that have been building this thing specifically for the web for a long time, and there's a lot of knowledge there, and I'm trying to see what I can learn from that. I guess that's where I'm at. So yeah, I'm learning PHP because we use PHP at Design Collective, and it's, as CTO, I should probably be proficient enough to be able to fix something if it breaks, or be able to make changes to something, you know, if it breaks. So I'm already proficient enough with JavaScript that I could do that with the front end, you know. I'm proficient enough with Elixir that I could do that. So PHP is the one other language that we're using that I'm not really. And so that's what I'm doing. So I'm spending time in Laravel trying to see what I can learn and take back. And maybe there's some libraries I could create for Elixir. Honestly, a lot of the stuff that I've seen that I've wanted, I'm like, oh, that's a plug. Or, oh, that's this other thing that already exists just by a different name. But yeah, so maybe my contribution to Elixir open source can be something that Laravel does or an idea, and I can kind of codify that in a library of some sort.
Yeah, I like the idea of that. That's good to hear. That's why I asked you, because I'm sure there's your head just swimming when you look at all this stuff. I mean, obviously, Laravel is a much more mature ecosystem, and so they're going to have more advanced concepts like that have proven themselves out. So It's good to lie, cheat, and steal. Those imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, right? So there you go.
Right. Yeah. And it's, I had to get over that initial, ew, this is PHP thing, because forever, that's what I've heard forever, you know? And once I got over it, like jumping into different communities, like different Laravel communities, people are just really nice. People just, they're happy with the language. I mean, obviously there are people that have, you know, gripes with certain things. Like, for example, I think one of the classic things that people complain about with PHP is argument order or consistency of parameters and functions. But other than that, people are just making stuff with PHP, and that's kind of cool.
I mean, I know Marco Arment from Accidental Tech Podcast, right? He writes Overcast, and which is a podcast app for iOS. And like all his server stuff is in PHP because that's what he knows. And he's just a freaking, you know, he's super hyper focused on like learning everything about the fewest number of technologies possible, right? like the deep dive. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, all his server stuff is in freaking PHP, because that's what he wrote Tumblr in, and that's what he knows, and he's really good at it.
Yeah, that's one thing I've been thinking about too, and that's one thing that Paul always said to me as well, was think about how many huge companies, if PHP was really bad, you know, Slack wouldn't be on it probably. Facebook, you know, all these other...
I mean, listen, you could be writing Cold Fusion. It could be way worse.
Yeah. But I guess that's what I'm doing, is I'm trying, like you said, I'm trying to go deeper. So I have all these Phoenix books. I spend half of my week jumping farther, deeper into Elixir and Phoenix, and I spend half my week learning more about PHP and Laravel, and I'm trying to kind of meld the two worlds together, I suppose. In my knowledge, that is.
That's really cool. I'm curious to see what you what comes out of it.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going to be on vacation next week, like a very, very lax like vacation where we really don't have any plans. We're just kind of hanging out for the week. And so I'd like to use that time to kind of explore some new things and maybe poke some ideas around and like not work on work stuff, but just like work on things I've been thinking about, you know, not necessarily like new languages or frameworks, but concepts and like things that have been floating around in my brain I've been thinking about, and mm-hmm. and try to like just disconnect and just see how far I can get on a particular idea, because I don't know, I work really well in that environment where I just know I'm not going to be distracted by work stuff, and just kind of exploratory. I know people have the concept of I don't know, like work, what is it called?
Workations.
Like you base. Yeah, like workation, right? Where you literally like hold yourself up in a cabin for a week or two and try to bang something out. It's not going to be quite like that, but I want to follow that same idea that you're, the same road that you're going down. We're just kind of playing with some new things, explore some new things. Maybe I'll check out some new tech. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's whatever. I got my laptop and I can tether to my phone. I don't need anything else, right?
I mean, that point that you made about, and this is actually a point that something that Paul mentioned to me maybe last week, I think. So I've tried a bunch of different stuff out now, like, on my off time, I've messed around with Go. It seems okay. Messed around with, you know, some C#. Cool. Messed around with a few other languages, and I really like Elixir. Obviously my day job uses Elixir, and I'm obviously going to keep using Elixir because it's working really well for me so far. But then I have this other subset of things that I maybe want to build or things I want to work on. And PHP just, and coincidentally, those are all just web things, right? They're all web things. And so PHP is built for the web. And so the Laravel community, it's a web community. They make web apps. That's what it is, right? So I figure like it wouldn't be a waste of my time. You know, number one, PHP is a very, very widely used language. So for example, if I needed to hire a contractor, how hard would it be for me to find someone that's proficient in PHP versus Elixir, right? So there's that, but also, you know, there's like Laravel's satellite of community, right? So there's Laravel, which is akin to Rails. There's Lumen, which is a stripped down version of it, which I guess would be similar to Sinatra, but it has more than Sinatra. So it has like the job system and the queue system and authorization system and all that stuff in it still. And then I think there's these people that are, I think they're called Titan. They're like basically a Laravel web shop. They make a static site builder called Jigsaw that looks really nice too, and it uses Blade. And I really like Blade as a templating engine. So there's a lot of like, there's tools exist in the ecosystem using the familiar set of tooling that I could use to make the stuff that I want to make, which again, like I said, is coincidentally all web. If it weren't all web, then obviously I would have to look at other things, like for example, C# for making games or whatever. But the stuff that I'm interested in building right now is all web-based, so PHP is a really good tool for that.
Yeah, and you even got Swift on the server now. It's starting to be a thing. It's a bunch of different Swift web frameworks if you want to get down that road and learn some iOS Swift development, because Swift is pretty freaking awesome. I'll be honest, if I hadn't discovered Elixir, just performance-wise, I would have seriously considered doing Swift.
Oh, yeah?
For web applications. Oh, yeah. It's a great, great language, and now that it's open source and really available more widely for Linux things, I would have seriously considered that if I hadn't found Elixir first.
Yeah, it sounds cool. I follow a couple of people that talk about it, Swift on the server, that is. It seems pretty neat. It seems like a neat language.
Yeah, I mean, how great it would be to, you know, write your client and server applications in the same language.
I mean, that's what we have Node for, right?
Well, yeah, but a good language.
Ooh, I felt that deep.
It's real.
Well, hopefully, yeah, have fun on your weekend. Hopefully you can relax and feel, if you need to feel productive, but if you don't need to, then don't feel productive, you know? Hopefully it is what you need.
I think one of the times when I went this week, do the same vacation every year, and I brought the, I just bought the Ruby book. It's the Ruby, Practical Object Oriented Design in Ruby, also known as Pooter.
Pooter, yeah. I have that actually on my shelf over here.
It's a small book. It's very, it's almost like a pamphlet, how short it is. But I brought that with me on vacation, and I read it. And my head was like exploding constantly. I was like, oh, I got to get back to work and implement all these cool things and modules and oh my God, everything's a plain old Ruby object. Yeah. I don't know. That downtime can be pretty valuable.
Yeah, it can. It can.
Well, yeah, thanks. I'm looking forward to this. We'll see. I'm looking forward to listening to the episode that you put out next week.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to hearing from all the PHP devs in the room that will tweet at me after hearing this episode. In fact, if you do listen to the show and you're into Laravel or have used it, send me some resources. Send me what you like about it. Send me what you don't like about it. Good and bad experiences. I think all knowledge is good knowledge. Let me know what you're thinking about Laravel and if I'm making a colossal mistake.
We also appreciate hearing from Dan Schulzer, the author of POW.
Yeah, so you mentioned the libraries that we were talking about, and Coherence specifically was sort of made with this sort of configuration, right? So it's extendable via configuration, which made it really difficult to work with later on. And so Dan Schulzer that hit us up, he said he basically was inspired to make POW because he was having to migrate away from Coherence. So he took the lessons he learned from that and made POW, which is extendable via code, and it looks really awesome. I think if I were to have to make another app and use some sort of auth layer, I would definitely probably reach for POW. And he mentioned specifically that he's working on the documentation for the API side of things, because right now it's mostly set up for working with traditional server-side rendered apps, even though you can do API requests with it. So he's working on fleshing out the documentation more and getting things ready for both sides of the tracks there. But yeah, I really appreciate him reaching out and sort of mentioning that. And one note that he did mention specifically was he would advise against rolling your own basic authentication if you can, and instead reach towards something like POW, because he's done a lot of work around thinking about security and thinking about how people can game systems and stuff. So I guess he's basically working towards finding a good middle ground of what we were talking about last week, of like over-engineering a solution with OTP and all that stuff versus running with the simplest solution you possibly can. So it seems like POW is shaping up to be a really good middle ground for that.
Yeah, you nailed it. So you can reach out to us like Dan did on Twitter at DNC Show on Twitter. I said Twitter again. Twitter. Sean is Sean Washbot, and I'm Shrockwell. It's S-C-H.
S-C-H, because I still spell it wrong to this day.
Everyone does.
S-C-H Rockwell. Show notes are available at dnc.show. Most of the things I've talked about today, I'll put all the Laravel things in there as well. All those links will be available at dnc.show.
The sad part about the Shrockwell thing is that I didn't actually realize it until somebody, like this girl in third grade, like called me out on it. It's like, oh, your name, I'm just going to shorten name to Shrockwell. And I was like, oh my God.
Shrockwell.
It's been the moniker ever since. And you know what? That name is never taken when I try to register for things. It's great.
I think the best moniker I was ever given was Squashington.
I like that. Any reason?
No reason.
Just because it sounds cool?
Yeah, I don't know. Sean Squashington. There's no reason. My middle name doesn't have a Q in it, so.
Could be worse.
Could be worse.
Come up with way worse names for you.
Yeah, probably.
As always, we'll post the discussions over on spectrum.chat where you can post, look at the show notes and chat at us. Just come say hi.
Come say hi to us. And as always, thanks to Spec for having us. You should definitely support the other shows on the network. They've got some really great shows like Design Details and Fragmented and Developer Tea. So head on over to Spec.fm and check out some of those shows.
As always, this episode of Does Not Compute was edited by Mikhail Delport and produced by Sarah Jackson.
Ba-da-bop.
That's right.
That's right. Well, enjoy that vacation.
I'll try. I'll try not to at you too much.
All right.
See ya.
See ya.